Chapter 2. Unaware I'm tearing you asunder. Sabo truly believes in the Revolutionary Army as a whole. He has respect for their work and trusts in their leadership. He's seen firsthand how his own efforts have paid off in liberating the oppressed and dismantling tyrannical local governments. Every second he's put into his life here has been more than worthwhile. That said, sometime Sabo would appreciate a fucking break. He and Koala are back in Baltigo, fresh in from a month-long undercover op. Just walked through the front door fresh. And the only immediate plans on Sabo's mind involve debriefing, showering, and then sleeping for approximately 32 hours straight. The barely controlled mayhem he's immediately confronted with inside headquarters throws a wrench into those plans with impeccable aim. Everyone is hurtling towards the Situation Room, and Sabo gives himself 2 seconds to daydream about slipping past whatever fresh hell this is and bolting to his quarters before he trades a bolstering glance with Koala and follows. Dragon, sitting at his desk in the back of the room, makes absolutely no attempt to restore order. In fact, he only looks up to establish direct eye contact with Sabo, clearly a reminder that as Chief of Staff, this is his problem. I owe him everything and have nothing to gain by flipping his desk over, Sabo reminds himself sternly. What a welcome committee, he says, voice loud enough to carry over the room. The cheer in his voice is a hidden blade. Koala calls this his anglerfish tone, and in his periphery he sees her twitch uneasily. Glad to see how you conduct yourselves when I'm not around. It's maybe slightly unfair, but he's tired. And his staff is better trained than this. If it's an actual emergency, there's protocols to follow. And this scrambling around is both time-wasting and makes them look stupid, which is slightly more unforgivable in his eyes. If it's not an emergency, then they're keeping him from sleeping in a bed for the first time in 3 days for nothing. And he's fully prepared to take that personally. A good 2/3 of the room has gone still and silent. The rest are the people who seem to be actually working, so he'll take it. Terry, he calls out. Fill me in, please. The intelligence officer doesn't even look up from the snails he's coaxing into position. A little Kamiko and its partner Proko, neither of which are immediately familiar to Sabo at a glance. The Paramount War is over, Terry says, succinctly explaining the frenetic energy that Sabo and Koala walked in on. Sabo feels his spine straighten. In 2 days, there still hasn't been any new information in the papers about the outcome of the war. The world government has been tight-lipped, and they're clearly leaning on the press. He and Koala hadn't been in any position to access the broadcast of Fire Fist's execution during their mission, but even if they had, apparently the live feed went dark at a certain point. The whole thing smacked of a cover-up. They stopped the broadcast, but the transponder snail kept recording, Terry goes on. One of our moles was able to make a copy, and it's just arrived. All of you are forgiven for acting insane, Sabo declares, clapping his hands together. Koala snorts, and Hack rolls his eyes. Dragon just turns a page in the reports he's reading, looking entirely unconcerned by the potential uncovering of a grand conspiracy, because Dragon is a soulless individual who hates fun things. The Kamiko finally settles, and the Proko's eyes light up, and everyone's attention flies to the video projected on the wall. Sabo studies the scene. An incongruously sunny sky hanging above an execution scaffold. A young man on his knees with a curtain of dark hair hanging in his face. And Fleet Admiral Sengoku beside him, voice magnified by the transponder snail in his hand. Typical of the world government to make a production of this, Sabo thinks, disgusted. How dare they show this man's death off like it's a sporting event? And he's angry, he realizes. Angry, as Sengoku goes on about Fire Fist's true lineage, all the while the pirate himself denies it. His desperate shout of, "Whitebeard is the only father I have," is drowned out by the implacable, damning truth that rings out for the world to hear. Your real father is Gold Roger. Immediately, the Situation Room is buzzing. This is news. Big news. That Goldie Roger had a son and he's already made a name for himself on the Grand Line? But it's all static to Sabo's ears. White noise. He can't hear anything. He's having an out-of-body experience. He knew that already. He knew Roger had a kid. How did he know that? And why is he so furious he feels like he could come apart with it? That secret wasn't Sengoku's to tell. In the recording, Firefist has yet to lift his head, kneeling there behind those crossed swords. But the defeated slump of his shoulders and the painful clench of his hands makes Sabo want to scream. That's not what he should look like. That's not where he belongs. Firefist Ace, 2nd Division Commander of the Whitebeard Pirates. He's smiling in his wanted posters, a devilish smirk that gives the game away that he's every bit as dangerous as his bounty suggests. The combination of that wicked expression and his dark complexion and the freckles scattered across the bridge of his nose always causes Sabo's gut to clench unpleasantly. He doesn't give the posters more than a passing glance when he sees them because they make him feel oddly seasick. Homesick. Something. But now the picture's burned into his mind. He can't blink it away. Suddenly, he can see that smile and those freckles on a much younger face. A tangle of dark hair, always a little too long because he hated letting grown-ups near his head with scissors, and he didn't trust his brothers not to make him look stupid on purpose. Tiny hands clenched around a length of heavy metal piping, strong enough to do whatever damage he needed them to. Still learning how to be gentle. Ace. The name surfaces from the bottom of his heart, but it doesn't belong to a stranger anymore. It's not some random Whitebeard pirate, not some distant, unrelated prisoner about to meet his end at the hands of a corrupt world government. Ace, he thinks, and it comes to him in a sunburst, a supernova. My brother. Bo? Sabo? Koala's voice beside him makes him jump. He realizes she's shaking his arm, that she's probably been saying his name over and over. You're going to hyperventilate if you keep this up, Sabo. Breathe. He breathes. He's in the back of the room, and a few people are eyeing him in concern, but everyone else is still watching the projection in the front. He's free to press the heel of his hand against his sternum and try to force steel into his heart. It doesn't work. For all of his training, for everything he's seen and done up to this point, and everything he survived, he can't keep the panic from corroding his good sense like acid. Oh God, he thinks helplessly as the situation in the video rapidly deteriorates, the Whitebeard pirates arriving to stake their claim and the Marines refusing to give ground, and his brother, caught in the middle of it all. Oh God, don't die. Don't die. Don't let him die. But it's pointless. Sabo is watching this from the future. He's standing here where he's completely useless, where he can't do anything that matters, miles and days away from the spot where Ace! His own voice, young and rough, right on the edge of laughter. He's a child, standing on a lopsided wooden dock where a ramshackle-looking fishing boat is moored. He's happy to see his friend break out of the dense woods and make his way down to the cove at a jog. You finally showed up! Took you long enough! His brother blows out an annoyed huff, bare feet thudding across the wheezing, sun-bleached planks. He knocks a shoulder into Sabo's as soon as he's close enough. His affection masquerades as antagonism because that's the best he knows how to do. But Sabo can tell the difference. Yeah, I told you to go ahead without me. It's not like I don't know how to swim. A smaller body collides with both of them, arms wrapping around them in a way that defies physics. But it isn't alarming. It isn't even weird. If anything, Sablo thinks it's cute. No way! We had to wait for you, another familiar voice says petulantly. We have to go together, dummy! Oh, you're the last person who can call me a dummy, Lou. Sabo, I'm not above dragging you to the infirmary, Koala says, squeezing his wrist. You're freaking me out. I'm fine, he says. Or he thinks he says that. He says something, probably. He doesn't know. His entire life is in upheaval. Memories he suppressed for the last 10 years are inching their way back, making room for themselves, painting everything else he knows in a new light. Some of it trickles back slowly, reluctantly, like water picking its way around a bend. A locked door, barred windows, uncomfortable family photos. Running through the streets while the world burned down outside the kingdom wall, searching desperately for someone, anyone, a single person who might care. The rest comes roaring through like a flood. A treehouse at the top of the mountain where they could see for miles. Racing through the city with his pockets full of stolen gold, laughing so hard he couldn't catch his breath, certain he's won their bet of who could score the biggest. That stormy night spent clustered in the hollow of a giant tree, because they didn't make it home before the sky cracked open. His little brother had fallen asleep as soon as they stopped moving around, as he was wont to do. His head nestled comfortably on Sabo's shoulder. Sabo stayed awake and watched Ace spend a better part of an hour coaxing a fire to life in a pile of scavenged sticks and damp leaves, just to keep them warm. There's another sudden arrival on the screen. A boy falls from the sky, and an entire, presumably stolen warship falls with him. It's a ridiculous, explosive entrance to the stage, and it puts everyone on the back foot. He's tiny next to the Titanic Whitebeard, tiny next to everyone on Marineford. But appearances are deceiving. This is Straw Hat Luffy, the rookie making waves across the sea. The pirate who inexplicably broke into and then out of Impel Down for reasons known only to himself. No, the reason he did that is obvious. It's exactly the kind of thing he would do. He's just the same now as he's always been. Inexhaustible, inexorable. Brought up by the do-or-die laws of the jungle and two big brothers who never taught him to know when to quit. Luffy, who feels too strongly and loves too hard and dreams too big. Luffy, who walked right into hell for his brother because it wouldn't occur to him to do any less. Luffy. Little Luffy always running after them. The other half of Sabo's heart slotting neatly into place. Luffy throws up his arms and calls Ace's name as if he's exhilarated to have made it in time. He is the only one happy about this development. For the first time since he was brought out onto the scaffold, Ace surges forward against his chains. His expression is wretched before it screws up into a snarl. This has nothing to do with you, he bellows, loud enough to be heard across the plaza, over the heads of hundreds of soldiers. I don't want your help. Get the hell out of here. He sounds angry, properly furious and scared out of his mind. Sabo feels a moment of hysterical camaraderie. The mind-numbing dread Sabo felt at seeing Ace on the execution scaffold has nothing on the absolute terror of watching their baby brother show up there. Luffy claims Ace for the entire world to hear, and Sengoku reveals his parentage too. He is the son of the worst criminal in the world. Sabo's own boss. If he weren't having a dozen panic attacks all at once, he would have more of a reaction to that, probably. He's definitely going to put a pin in it for later. It feels like he died and came back to life, and now he's dying again. It feels like he's gone entirely insane. His brothers are in danger, and he's standing back and watching this like it's a theater performance. He hates this. He hates this. He can't tear his eyes away. When the recording comes to an end, the last thing Sabo sees is Akainu burning a chunk out of Luffy's chest. Ace's desperate scream is still ringing in his ears. The room around him is full of some of the brightest minds in the world, and they're already deep in discussion. They're mulling over what they've seen, what they've learned about Fire Fist and Straw Hat, what this means for the next generation, what the world government is going to do now. None of them are asking the important question, so Sabo takes it upon himself to direct them. He is their chief of staff, after all. "Where are they?" he demands. "Find them. Now."